The aromas of fresh green chili with guacamole, with marinated meats wrapped in a homemade tortilla are heavenly. And when you stuff your face with the beautiful cuisine that comes from Mexico, stopping only to slurp in chilled horchata, you are on sacred ground. Are you hearing me?
Yes.
Yes. So my friend and I, we are stuffed. And it's as if our stomachs are smiling, right? And it's as if like our lips are free. And then what happens next, I'm not prepared for. What happens next is there was this turn in our conversation. There was this literal and awesome honesty. You know those type of like holy ground conversations where things get real, real quick. And so my friend sort of straightens his jaw and he looks at me and he just says, I don't understand what would compel anyone, how low someone could ever get to do such violence to someone else. And then he wept. And I'm sitting at that table, and it was, like I said, sacred ground. And then 1 second later, he looks at me with conviction and he says, people just need to be nice and kind and remember that we're all carrying a lot of painful stuff. And then it was my turn to weep. And as we sat at that table, there was this uncomfortable silence. There was this sense of, this is heavy and this is tough, but something beautiful is happening at this table. And then my friend, like my friend always does, he says, why did the chicken cross the road? And I smile at him and I'm thinking, oh my goodness, to get to the other side, right? And he says this, he says, to get away from people and all their problems. And so I wonder if you've ever felt like my friend. I wonder if you've ever felt this rhythm of self, this sense of anger and rage at things that people do, but at the same time, you feel this rhythm of compassion, this deep hope, this deep sense that things could be different, and if we all acted differently, maybe the world could be different. The rhythm of self and the rhythm of compassion. Two of these strong beats that fight within us, it seems as if. So I want to share with you a couple of unbelievable enigmas of human behavior. Here we go. The man who treats the grocery store parking lot like a NASCAR racetrack. His tires screech and engine revs as he pulls past you for the last parking spot. He smiles and does not see your kids crying and fussing and screaming because they are tired, hungry, and have to go to the bathroom. How about this one? The person who uses grandma and grandpa's handicapped parking pass for a front row spot at the movie theater. And then he has the audacity to walk past you with a fake limp. Or this one. The family that pretends their kids have special needs so they can get in the front of the line of the amusement park. All 10 of you didn't need to be at the front of the line, right? The next one. The person who leaves their dog's droppings in the same spot every day, right in the middle of the community trail. This is such a problem in Highlands Ranch near my house. They have this sign. They hired a graphic designer to say this. If not you, then who? It's just like loaded, right? Look, please pick up and properly dispose of dog waste in a trash receptacle. Now remember, there's always the question behind the question, right? For them to pay the money to put these nice signs everywhere shows there's a lot of human dog droppings that are not being attended to, right? Or how about this one? The woman who prices items at her garage sale higher than Target. She tells you that bookcase carries a lot of memories. And you look at the bookcase and it's dusty and it's like got broken chunks falling off of it. And you're like, oh, let's go to Target, right? And then the last one. And now I'm speaking to men only on this one. The repulsive condition of men's public restrooms. Fellas, your mom did not allow that. And so, what causes this human behavior? What causes this rhythm of the self that we have? And it's absolutely fascinating because psychologists are doing a lot of work now on what they are labeling the self-serving bias. And so they're doing all kinds of surveys and studies about what is this inclination towards selfish behavior that humans have. And this is kind of how they do their survey. So they will, this is an example of one of the surveys they do. They will ask people to answer these questions as either better than average, average, or below average. So they'll say, compared to the average person of your age, how good of a driver are you? And you, of course, answer better than average, average, or below average, right? Second question, compared to the average person your age, how good of a friend are you? Better than average, average, below average. Lastly, compared to the average person, how honest are you? Better than average, average, or below average? What do you think people came up with? Hands down, 90% of people say better than average on everything, right? So, better than average, really? Everyone? Psychologists tell us that there's a bell curve to human characteristics and behavior that actually, there are characteristics that me and you have that are better than average. However, we don't have all of them. We have other characters where the honesty is we're very below average, right? And so, hilarious. There's studies they do where they say where they're able to sort of test people's sort of ability to admit their wrongs, where people admit, and people are far more likely to tell you their successes were all because of how good they are than to own up to the places in life where they've failed and had misfortune. And so this incredible analysis is this self-serving bias, right? Or this rhythm of self in our world. And it's interesting because what's wrong with this, where it leads to is that when you always think you are better than average, you always think you're better than others. And that sort of leads to this incredible slippery slope. And we've been talking a lot about our hearts. And if we truly believe that our hearts are the center of our thoughts, our actions, and emotions, then once we let this better than average mentality, this rhythm of the self, we are directed towards some incredibly sad behaviors like this. We believe that our groups, our friends are better than others. We believe our friends are better. We believe that our children are better. That children's painting wasn't that good. Remember, you've all seen these children's paintings. I got like 500 of them at my house, and one of them might be good, but they're precious because they're my kids. But then it goes on to, it gets even worse. Our personal values are better than other personal values. Our nationalities are better. Our race, our class, our gender. And then we're like in the red zone, right? Of like, oh, wait a minute. We have nothing to learn from other people. We are better than others. And we are better than average. So our material possessions, those darn bookcases that we set out at our garage sale are a whole lot better than the brand new one at Target, right? And so this this rhythm of the self is fascinating because when we continue this mentality, it starts to direct our life. It starts to have a strong pull on us. And the rhythm of self is this human tendency for individuals to think they are better. It's perpetual self-focus and the inability to see and respond to other people's needs. It shrinks the complexities of the world, your address, your routines, and your desires, to which you say, why did the chicken cross the road? To get away from people and their problems, right? But what's incredible, and the good news that shimmers to us today, is that there is in our world the rhythm of compassion. There is a backbeat that you can lean into. There is a groove that is far better than the rhythm of self. So I want to tell you a story. In the Iliad of Homer, there's this incredible story about the rhythm of compassion. And by the way, the rhythm of compassion is everywhere. It's just a matter of having eyes to see this rhythm of compassion and leaning into it. So in the Iliad of Homer, there's this 10-year war between Greece and Troy. And then we have Achilles, the great warrior of everything. And Achilles has lost his friend Patroclus. And sadly, Hector, his nemesis, has killed his best friend. And so Achilles is filled with anger and rage and revenge. And this is how cool Greek epics are, because they paint the human condition. Achilles is stuck in the rhythm of self. He cannot eat food. He won't drink. All day long, he thinks about how he's going to revenge his friend. He is grief-stricken. And so, what happens in the story is that finally, of course, as Achilles the great warrior does, he kills Hector. Not only does he kill Hector, though, he mutilates his body by tying it to his chariot and driving it around the city for 12 days in a row. And this story is amazing because it paints to us that this does not soothe his soul. This gets him even more angry and rageful and revengeful. The rhythm of self is taking over Achilles. And so the gods in the heavenly pantheon get together and they're like, we got to change this situation. And so they send King Priam, Hector's dad. So Hector's dad walks into the enemy's camp, an old man, 90 years old or over, and he walks into Achilles. Now this is like your enemy. And King Priam has had 50 of his sons killed by Achilles. And then in this incredible moment, King Priam kneels before Achilles and says, have compassion on me. Have compassion. And Achilles is deeply moved. All of a sudden, he is jarred out of the rhythm of self. He hands over the body tenderly to his father, because in ancient Greek, if his body isn't buried properly, he roams the earth for eternity with no peace. So he hands over the body to this man. And all of a sudden, Achilles is living into a different backbeat. The rhythm of compassion. And he's concerned that King Priam is eating well. It's this incredible turn and shift in this story. The rhythm of compassion. So compassion is feeling with one another. Feeling with another. Or you could say it this way. Compassion is seeing the frailty of another human heart and purposefully meeting their needs. So compassion is Achilles. Seeing for the first time the grief-stricken heart of a father who loses a son and being moved to hand over his body so that a proper funeral and a proper grief process should start. And I was so amazed this week when I started looking at the Bible and I started looking at the Gospel of Matthew, and it's scene after scene, we get this incredible picture of Jesus, the compassionate one. And the way the Gospel of Matthew does it is it just sort of inserts it carefully, beautifully, unfolding for us the one who came from heaven, the incarnate one, teaching us that this one who came from heaven is the incarnate one of compassion. Incarnate compassion. The rhythm of compassion teaching us this backbeat. And so I want these words to just fall over you today. And in Matthew 9:36, Matthew tells us, when he saw the crowds, he had compassion for them because they were harassed and helpless, like sheep without a shepherd. And then in Matthew 14:14, when he went ashore, he saw a great crowd and he had compassion for them and cured their sick. Then Jesus called his disciples to him and said, I have compassion for the crowd because they have been with me now for 3 days and have nothing to eat. And I do not want them to send them away hungry, for they might faint on the way. And out of compassion for him, the Lord of that slave released him and forgave him all of his debts. Moved with compassion, Jesus touched their eyes. Immediately they regained their sight and followed him. So verse after verse, the Gospel of Matthew paints us a picture of the compassionate one. The one who comes for those who are harassed. The one who comes to the helpless. The one who comes to the sick, to the hungry, to the faint-hearted, to the indebted, and to the blind. Jesus sees. Jesus sees the frailty of the human condition. Jesus sees you. Jesus sees you. He sees the brokenness, he sees the pain, he sees the insecurities, he sees the inadequacies, he sees everything about you. And then he purposefully meets your needs. He meets you in that place of deep, vulnerable need and fills you with compassion. Jesus' eyes are filled with compassion for you. So in our world, there are these two competing rhythms. The rhythm of self and the rhythm of compassion. And you know that feeling when you do two things. Either you actually have this old thing called CDs, and you decide, and if you have some records, those are awesome, save those. That's so hipster of you to save those records. Or you have an iTunes library, and every once in a while you have this sort of feeling of like, I just want to think through the songs that have been meaningful through my life. And as you sort of flip through the CDs, look through the records, or go through that iTunes, you start to think about songs that you played when you were a kid. And then you think about songs when you were middle school and high school, and you just kind of move through it. And there's some songs that you're like, man, that was so stupid. Let me give you an example. Sir Mix-a-Lot, I Like Big Butts. I didn't plan to say that. It just kind of came out. Stupid, right? Stupid song. And so some songs maybe have like a fun for the moment, but there's other songs that you're like, oh my goodness, that song was played for me from my dad or from my mom, or maybe at the school dance, and that song still resonates. That song has a power to it. So the rhythm of self, it's a song that's worn out. People are tired of it. Its beat is not lasting. But the rhythm of compassion, that's a groove that is compelling. That's a groove that makes you want to tap your feet and get involved. And Jesus offers us the rhythm of compassion, something that's truly compelling, something that the world stops to take note of. So compassion is Jesus' song, and it resonates in our hearts, offering us a centering and grounding power for a meaningful life. So this morning as we conclude, the last verse I want to share with you, Luke 6:36. This is the only verse where it says anything like this in the entire Bible. It says, become compassionate, just as your heavenly Father is compassionate. So when we begin to learn this rhythm of compassion, it's not that we compare ourselves to others. We compare ourselves to the one who continually showers compassion on everyone. And it's not that it's a competition. It's more like that groove is so compelling, I can't help to sing it out loud to my friends and my family. Become compassionate is the call as you are drenched and marinated in the Father's loving compassion for you. So I want to ask you this morning, is there someone you know that needs the rhythm?